Brian Dayton is here with us right now from the West Virginia Chamber of Commerce. Good afternoon, sir. Welcome to the show.
It's a good afternoon, Dave. It's great to be back with you.
Snow lover, snow hater, snow in-betweener?
You know, I now have a plow on my four-wheeler, so it's a little bit fun.
Okay.
I spent a good bit of time on it yesterday. We live on a hill, and mm-hmm. we're a private road, so it's we do it ourselves, and so I spent a good bit of time yesterday out.
You've been waiting for this day, haven't you?
Kind of have.
You're out there in July trying to find things to push over the hill.
Like full dad mode, yes. Going out, and yes.
All right, you just returned from the Capitol, and we heard Jeff's report at the end of the last hour that House Speaker Roger Hanshaw laid out his agenda, the agenda for the upcoming legislative session. I was a little busy at that time, so I didn't get an opportunity to dive into it. That's why we had Jeff on, but you were there. Your take.
So, you know, really what we heard was a heavy focus on jobs, the economy, economic development, which is music to our ears at the West Virginia Chamber of Commerce. I mean, that's been what we've been preaching for years, is keep the focus where it matters. And that's on how do you create more jobs? How do you create more opportunity for West Virginia families? How do you bring more business to this state? And so what we heard was a heavy focus from the Speaker of the House. And he was surrounded, I think I counted 56 members of his caucus, so a supermajority of his caucus behind him. And that's what they were talking about, was let's put the focus on jobs and the economy, how to really improve the lives of West Virginians.
Can we break that down a little bit? I mean, some specifics of things he said about the about jobs?
You know, one of the things that we heard, and I'm really interested to see the bill, is a program called Teams West Virginia. Mm-hmm. And so when he was describing it as modeled after Jobs Ohio, and what Ohio essentially done has taken their economic development efforts and, in essence, privatized them and tried to get politics out of it, so that you're looking at decisions of what is good for West Virginia. Is that going to be an economic benefit? And the reality is sometimes political factors come into play, and we've seen projects here in West Virginia that have been lost to those things. So I think where you're trying to just get it down to, is this good for West Virginia? Will this provide more jobs and remove the politics, is a good thing. So we're interested to see exactly what that will look like. Mm-hmm. But that was one of the things he talked about that really, I think, caught our attention.
And this focus on business and jobs and things of that nature. And look, you and the Chamber of Commerce over the last couple of years have you come on this show, and you've done other interviews and your other appearances where you've talked about not a total lack of focus on jobs, because there's obviously been economic development and so on and so forth, but not as much emphasis on it as some people would like.
Well, and I think what also adds on to that is we've been watching the employment numbers in West Virginia. And starting in July of 2024, we started noticing, June of 2024, that we started noticing a dip in employment numbers compared to the same spot of the previous year. And that has continued on. That's concerning because that means we have fewer jobs than we did at this point last year. That means fewer tax dollars being collected. We see a lower workforce participation in the state. So those are things that have really caused us some concern. And really, that means we need to double down and figure out what can we do to go ahead and boost those numbers back up. We all saw what the pandemic did, but we got back to pre-pandemic levels, and then we started slipping again, and other states are continuing to move forward. So
why is that, Brian?
You know, it's I think that there's a lot of different factors. We have an elderly population in West Virginia. We've trying to go ahead and bring industry here. We have had some real home runs. Nucor, Procter & Gamble, Owens & Minor, Form Energy have been some real home runs. But we've also lost a lot of different employers in West Virginia. A lot of manufacturing has left the state, and those are typically very good paying jobs.
Yeah, sure.
And
plus all the ancillary industries that go along.
Absolutely.
With them. You know, in the coal industry, the number for years, it was that they would always say that for every coal job, that's 7 to 8 to 9 other jobs directly in line with that.
Absolutely. And you know, we're also seeing an evolving energy landscape, not just nationally, but in the world.
Yeah.
And so those are things that have been impacting West Virginia. But it's also saying to us, we have to be laser focused. We have to be laser focused on what are things that are going to go ahead and make us more competitive, and how to get those businesses to come to West Virginia and create more jobs and opportunity. Because we don't have the margin for error. We're not a Charlotte, North Carolina. We're not a Dallas, Texas. We're not one of those areas. It's just a thriving and growing area. Columbus, Ohio is an example. We really have to stay focused to go ahead and bring those developments in here.
One of the things that Jeff, and again, we're talking to Brian Dayton from the West Virginia Chamber of Commerce. One of the things that Jeff joined us last hour to talk about is that there is a proposal, at least it's being thrown out there, of a 5% pay raise for teachers. Your thoughts on that?
Well, we have the lowest teacher pay in the country. Let's just get right down to it. We are 50th in teacher pay. We have anywhere from, depending on your sources, probably about 1,700 to 2,000 vacancies of certified teachers in their field. And the education community is not immune to the same problems that we're seeing in the rest of the employer community, and that is a workforce issue and trying to find available workers. And when you have that type of situation, you need to make sure that you're incentivizing people to go into those jobs. And if people can go make more money in a different place, frequently they will do so. And so when you're 50th in teacher pay, that is something you have to address. So,
and plus we're losing teachers, and we hear it all the time, to surrounding states, you know, in the Eastern Panhandle, they're losing teachers, and the border counties with Ohio that they're also losing. Pennsylvania, we're losing to other states.
You know, my father, before he passed, he was a teacher. He lived just outside of Wellsburg, West Virginia, on Washington Pike. Lived in West Virginia, and then drove 20 minutes into Washington, Pennsylvania, and taught school over there, where he could make $20,000 a year.
Right, and that's it's problematic. And, you know, we had Senator Eric Tarr on the program, and this is kind of going off in the weeds a little bit, but Eric Tarr on the show last hour, and we were talking about some of the committee hearings that were held yesterday about homeless students in West Virginia and foster care and so on and so forth. And I know what you said, Speaker Hanshaw, primarily talked about today was business, and that's great. And, again, I was on the air, so I haven't actually heard the whole thing. Was there any talk of foster care or anything like it? Because it's definitely a crisis. Foster care, child care in general is a crisis in West Virginia.
So, yes, we've been hearing a lot of those conversations over there, and I think everybody recognizes that is of the utmost importance to address. So let's just take the foster care system. We have an inordinate amount of children in foster care in West Virginia, and we hear stories all the time anecdotally about the problems within the system, that it's not working the way it should be. And you got to think, these are children, some of whom have spent the majority of their lives in the foster care system. Yeah. I mean, the majority, and that's terribly sad, and that needs to be a high focus to figure out what needs to be done to make that work. You and I have talked countless times about child care. And so that has been one of the conversations we've been having with legislative leadership, is what can we do to make sure that we're creating more child care opportunities and making it more affordable, because that directly impacts the ability to have a workforce in West Virginia. If you're going to be in a situation where one parent working and their entire salary goes to pay for childcare, they're going to make the decision to leave the workforce altogether. And that means they're not working, they're not productive, that employer is struggling to find workers. So it's a cyclical problem. So that is something that we've been discussing at great deal with them, is the importance of addressing childcare and, of course, the foster care system as well.
Talking to Brian Dayton from the West Virginia Chamber of Commerce, you folks have also put out your agenda for the future, the legislative priorities for the 2026 legislative session. Let's start with a couple of these: strengthening the business climate, calling for lowering the corporate net income tax to make West Virginia, your words, a top 10 state for competitiveness.
So that is, you know, there was about 15 years ago, there was a real discussion about lowering our corporate net income tax. And I believe it was at the time 9%, and we lowered it down to 6.5%. We are no longer in the top half of states as far as competitiveness with that tax. Here's the other thing. It is a very volatile source of revenue. Some years it brings in about $200 million. Some years it brings in over $400 million. So we've suggested getting on a path to cut that in half. It won't have a huge impact on the state's budget compared to other taxes, but it can really make West Virginia a more attractive place, and then hopefully get more businesses in here who will be paying a lower rate, but paying into the system. So that is for us a top priority, to really start having that conversation about that tax. And again, a very volatile revenue source. And when you have a volatile revenue source, it's not one you really want to depend on. A
couple of others in this category, Brian: eliminate the tax on machinery, equipment, and inventory. That's been floated out there for some time.
It's where we are an extreme outlier. And, you know, we've talked to members of the West Virginia Chamber who have to have a lot of inventory and are shipping it. They're basically storing their inventory in a different state and trucking it in day by day to go ahead and be part of their manufacturing processes, rather than build a facility here in West Virginia to store it. That's craziness. I mean, again, it's where we are an incredible outlier. Now, the challenge with that, we went through Amendment 2 a couple of years ago, is those taxes are primarily paid to localities. Mm-hmm. But we have to have a conversation about, we're such an outlier here, and what can we do to go ahead and shift that around and make us less of an outlier and to make us more competitive in jobs and economic development.
And I remember when that argument was going on, Brian, a couple of years ago, there were some folks that tend to be a little bit more conservatives in some of the county governments. And I'm not picking on county governments, but they said, oh, yeah, we're all for that. But then they realized, okay, well, this is going to kind of hurt, as you said, the localities. And then they were kind of, hey, let's pump the brakes on this for a second.
Well, and another challenge, I'll just remind everybody, that is one tax that is constitutionally enshrined.
Mm-hmm.
And so without the passage of a
constitution. Which is why it went on the ballot.
Which is exactly what went on the ballot. But the problem is, just even putting, you have to put it on the ballot to even begin talking about it. It doesn't mean you cut it away immediately, but you can't even really begin to have the conversation of how can we start to adjust it or start to go ahead and shift that tax burden around and so that we could eventually get to a place where we get rid of this tax where we're an outlier. You can't even have that conversation unless there's a constitutional amendment.
We talked about, you actually had four phases of this, strengthening the business climate, supporting families and workforce. We got into that a little bit. Here's another one, though. Ensuring legal fairness and efficiency. You're calling for reducing the statute of limitations on contracts for greater legal clarity to eliminate phantom damages and increase transparency in verdict and offer competitive judicial pay to attract and retain top talent. Let's talk about this reducing the statute of limitations on contracts for greater legal clarity. What do you mean by that?
So we have one of the longest statutes of limitation for written contracts, and that's 10 years. There are only 9 states that have a 10-year statute of limitations. Here's what that means. It's pretty simple. If you discover that you have been wronged in a contractual agreement, we suggest that you bring that lawsuit within 5 years rather than bring it within 10 years. Okay. We would like you to say, bring that suit within 5 years.
Okay, help me understand why you wouldn't bring it within the first. I mean, what would be the advantage to somebody not bringing it in that short of amount of time?
Well, that's kind of our point as well. You should be bringing it in a more timely fashion.
I mean, one would think that you'd want to kind of, okay, I've been wronged. Let's get the ball rolling here. I guess I don't, maybe somebody can explain it to me, but I don't know why you wouldn't want to do that.
Well, and our point, that is exactly the case. You should be bringing it earlier, but it doesn't always happen. So the problem is sometimes you have cases, it's not a great frequency, but they're brought years after the fact. And it's not a situation, basically the statute of limitations does not begin to toll until that violation has been discovered. So it's not from the moment the contract was written. It is from the moment that basically the violation was discovered. We're an outlier there. That bill passed the Senate on a very strong vote last year. That was one of the good bills that came out of the Senate, and it didn't make it through the House. And so we've said that's something that should remain a priority.
Eliminate phantom damages and to increase transparency in verdicts. What's the issue?
So it's really just to make sure that juries are fully aware of, you know, if there has been an injury, what type of, you know, phantom damages really comes down to what's actually paid in the medical bill versus what's the billed price, and that's going to be negotiated. But it's also just the ability with the collateral source to make sure that juries have the full awareness of what has already been paid out. So when they're making their decision and recommending, you know, a damages award, that they have the full picture in front of them.
Brian, appreciate you coming by today, but I want to ask you this question. If you could pick all of these things or one particular thing that is on the top of the list of the West Virginia Chamber of Commerce, I mean, these are different categories, but there is one thing we absolutely have to drive home and get done this session. One or two. I'll give you a little break here.
Sure.
What would those two things be?
Workforce. Absolutely. Workforce is one of the biggest things that's affecting our members right now. We are consistently hearing that we have jobs open within our membership. And again, our membership is located across the entire state of West Virginia and employs over half of the workforce in West Virginia. They have jobs available. They are struggling to find people to fill those jobs. So workforce is absolutely up there.
What can the people at the Capitol do about that, though, in reality?
So we really need to have a full conversation about workforce West Virginia. What are we doing to make sure that those who are on unemployment or those who are looking for jobs have the full picture of where jobs are available, what types of jobs are? I mean, that's been something workforce West Virginia, in our view, has been pretty good at processing unemployment claims and dealing with those on unemployment. We think there's a lot of work that can be done to better the ability for people on unemployment or even those people on not unemployment but are entering the workforce looking for work to go on and find where are jobs available, what types of jobs are available, and making sure that we're having a full connection, that we've got our businesses talking to our education system, they're talking to community colleges, higher education. And so really we think there can be a lot of work done there to improve that just to make sure those connections are being made.
In our conversation today, again, Brian Dayton with the Chamber of Commerce, and what you and Jeff are reporting back that Speaker Hanshaw talked about. You know what I haven't heard in any of that? Not one talk of any social issues. Haven't heard. You haven't said the word transgender. You haven't said the word vaccine. Any number of things. And I know that you've been on my show and others talking about not that things like that aren't important, but it's not where our focus should be. That's editorial comment on my part, you would say.
Well, and what I would just say to that is we have seen polling, poll after poll after poll, that show that a lot of what Speaker Hanshaw talked about today is what the voters overwhelmingly want the focus on. They want the focus on jobs. They want the focus on the economy. They want to make sure their children are able to get a good job here in West Virginia and have the option to stay here rather than have to move elsewhere for employment. It is at the top of the list. It has always been at the top of the list, that focus on jobs and the economy.
And when we're talking about bringing people into West Virginia, and especially with these different programs that, you know, people can come here and work remotely, we're trying to retain our young people here. We're trying to get people younger to West Virginia. That's not on their list of priorities for the most part. That's not on the list. And I'm talking about younger people. And I'm talking about many times those that tend to be a little bit, I know you guys are nonpartisan, but tend to be a little bit more conservative. It's not high on their list of priorities. These statistics bear that out.
Yes, absolutely. And so, again, when you put the focus on bringing more opportunity here, we've always said the best social program you can have is a good job. That solves a lot of the problems you're going to see in a society, and that's what we need to have more of. We need to have more opportunity here, more ability to go out, get good-paying jobs, and have a great life. This is a wonderful state. It is. This is a wonderful place. I'm blessed to be able to raise my children here. I'm blessed to have been born and raised in West Virginia, lived my entire life in here. We want that for more people. We want that opportunity for others here.
Brian Dayton, West Virginia Chamber of Commerce. Appreciate you being here, man. Thanks a lot.
Absolutely.